The people you relate to are important. Let's join Scott as he helps you evaluate the influences that affect your single-parent family.
Well, now let's turn your paper over now, and I'd like you to, on the back, we're going to list all the people, the significant people that relate to your family. This is going to take a few minutes. You might think there's hundreds of people, but as you start writing them down, you'll actually find that there aren't as many, probably, significant people as you think. It's important for us to look at not only the team, but the people outside of the team that influence the team. And the first thing I want to say is that if you find people outside the team hurting the relationships of the team, then you need to regroup. You need to pull back, because the relationships in the team are very, very important. And we need to protect them from outside influences as much as we can, or we need to learn, teach our children to deal with the difficult influences that they're going to experience in life in a way that doesn't damage the team. So we believe the team is a very significant part, and if you've kind of lost the team atmosphere in family life, you need to come back and pull it together. I don't care if you're talking about two people or five people in a single-parent family, you have a team that you're working with. So now there are a number of relationships that you're going to address in this team, and we divided them into groups. So in one column, you're going to list people who primarily relate to your children. This might be people that are their friends, school teachers and counselors, youth leaders of various kinds, their music coach or their sports coach. These are people that relate primarily to your children. Another group is the people who relate primarily just to you. These are your friends, other potential mates, counselors, people at work, and so on. These are people that primarily relate to you. And you can just start listing. I mean, names are going to start flowing into your mind. Write them down, then they won't be distracting you. And just write them down on your piece of paper in that category. The third category is a group of people that relate to the whole team. These might be people like another parent, or grandparent, or family friends. This is where everybody in the family has to relate to these other people. So we want to look at all of these kind of relationships, and we're going to give you some ideas about how to do with them. Now, what to do with them. We're not going to evaluate each of these categories and tell you how to deal with each category. Rather, we're going to give you some three principles that will help you to relate to the influences outside of your team in order to gain the most from them. It's true that there are relationships that drain you of energy. They're not supportive. In some ways, they're destructive but necessary. You know, those people that you have to be with, but they're not all that helpful to be with. Other times, there are relationships that are very encouraging, and the influence is very positive for your family, for your children, for you as a person. And so you want to learn what those relationships are and take advantage of them.
So we're going to share with you now three relationship suggestions that will deal with any of these three areas. We've just written down some names of people that interact with you and that you interact with in three different areas, but the three suggestions can apply to any of these. But let's first look at the first relationship suggestion, and we're going to first apply that to that first group of people, the people who are interacting with your children primarily. The first relationship suggestion is to choose influences wisely. And so we want to think about that in relationship to our children and the people that interact with our children. As you look over that list of names, I'm going to suggest that you put a plus, a minus, or a question mark next to each one of those names. The plus sign is for relationships there that are a positive influence on your child or your children. They're helpful. They're a positive influence. You like that input that they have in your child's life. They get a plus sign. A minus sign is for those relationships that either drain the energy from that child or from the children, or in some way they're not very helpful. They're not necessarily bad influences, negative influences, but they're just not helpful. They're not supportive of the relationships. Those are the negatives. The question marks are for people who are sometimes one, sometimes the other. Sometimes they're positive, they're helpful influences. Sometimes they're not quite so helpful. Those people get a question mark. Going through this exercise with each one of those names just gives you an idea of which of these relationships you really want to encourage. You want to encourage the positive relationships. Maybe there's so many relationships there you can't focus on all of them, so you want to be encouraging the positive ones and not spending so much time and energy encouraging the ones with the negative sign or the question mark. Also, you want to think about how your child or your children spend their time, and sometimes even the discipline that we as parents give our children, we want to take these into account. Sometimes a parent will have a child stay home from a church youth group activity as a discipline. We believe that's not necessarily helpful because of that relationship. The youth group leader might be a positive influence on your child's life. You don't want to have your child stay home from that activity as a discipline because going to that activity might be the best thing for your child at that point. We all need more positive influences in the lives of our children. No matter if you're single or not, you want positive influences in the lives of your children. You want to be looking for those. I pray that God would give my children more positive influences, leaders in their life that they can look to and grow from. So we want to be looking for those relationships and encouraging them. One dad told us this about a relationship with his son. He said he was continually trying to interest his son in spiritual things. But over the years, his son had been resistant to that and unresponsive. But at some point, a youth leader took an interest in this young man, and things began to change. The son gained a vision for reading God's word. He was so excited, he wanted to share what he was learning with his dad. Now, the dad just sat back and smiled. What he really wanted to say was, well, I've been telling you that for years. Why didn't you listen to me? But what he needed to do was just listen and realize at least this youth leader was having a positive influence on his son, so he just wanted to encourage that relationship.
You'd be surprised at how a simple task like this of listing all of your children's friends or the people that influence your children can have on your thinking patterns and the decisions you make. One mom said, as I wrote these things down, I realized that one of the negative influences was the babysitter. I had suspected that, but writing all these things down, when I wrote them all down, I realized that this was a significant relationship that was not helpful. And so she ended up changing babysitter situations. It's important to look at what's going on. One mom said, I realized that one of the negative relationships that has frustrated me for a long time is the relationship I have with my mother. It's just not working, and I often get frustrated in that situation. So she looked for ways to improve the relationship with her mother, not get rid of it, but to work on it so it would be stronger as her mom related to her children. Just writing down pluses and minuses and question marks often forces you to evaluate relationships in a way that you might not have otherwise. Well, now let's look at the group of people that relates primarily just to you. You need a support system. Now, if you have trouble asking other people for help, you're one of those people that doesn't like to get help from anybody, then you need to deal with it. Because we all need support and encouragement. What are you going to do when your 13-year-old girl decides that she has found the person she wants to marry who's also 13? Or 18? I mean, what are you going to do in that situation? What are you going to do when your 6-year-old lies over and over again and you don't know what to do? What are you going to do when your 10-year-old just stole a cell phone and it's ringing? Now, what are you going to do when your 2-year-old says no continually and you just don't know how to handle it properly? We all need support. And you're going to find that support in a number of different places. The way that you write down your list, you might find that you don't have very many pluses down there. You might end up significantly, decisively choosing some new relationships that are going to be productive in the relationship with your children or relationships with you. You see, when you have two parents, they often talk about the kids, they brainstorm about solutions, they determine if this consequence might work, or am I being too tough, or am I being too lenient? Sometimes other adults can see things you can't see. We need others to balance us out. You need a support system where you can go to ask questions or to receive encouragement and just do a reality check occasionally. But be deliberate about this. Evaluate the relationships. Choose the ones that are going to enhance relationship, enhance your family, and then you're going to minimize those that aren't. In one way or another, you're going to make decisive choices for the sake of the team. You as a leader in your family are going to choose the relationships wisely.
So we're talking about choosing the influences wisely. Let's move to that third group of people, those that interact with you as a family. Maybe these are grandparents. Maybe it's the other parent. Maybe it's a prospective mate or some family friends. These are people that relate to you and also relate to your children. You want to be looking at those relationships because often they're the ones that create the most friction or tension and challenge your sense of unity and teamwork. So you want to be looking at these relationships, looking for the ones that are positive, and working on the ones that you've got a negative sign next to or a question mark, helping them to become more of a positive influence. One mom told us this story. I've been working hard to develop teamwork in my family. I set aside some time each weekend for us to work all together on some house project, and then we watch a video together in the evening. I've also delegated chores to each of the kids throughout the week so that everyone does their part, either straightening up the family room or doing the laundry or even beginning some preparations for dinner. The kids are doing pretty well, but I've noticed more resistance from them on days when my mom visits. She'll make comments like, "The kids shouldn't have to work like this," or, "They should be out playing with their friends." I know that my mom means well, but her comments are damaging the sense of teamwork and cooperation that I've been trying to build. I'm finding it helpful to be more careful about my mom's visits and the things my kids are doing when she's over. I'm also looking for opportunities to talk to her about the positive sense of teamwork we now have and how working together has been helpful for all of us.
We're talking about the relationships outside the team and how they affect the team. The first principle we're suggesting is to choose those relationships wisely. The second principle we're suggesting is to understand triangles. Triangles involve three people. The first and second person are in conflict, and they draw in a third person to either help solve the problem or make it worse, depending on the response of the third person. Two children may bicker, and one of them calls mom in for some relief. She's the rescuer and forms a triangle. Or mom may be mad at the boss, and so she starts talking to one of her children, triangling one of her children into that relationship in order to relieve some of the pressure that exists there. The father of the children complains to the kids about mom. See, there's a stress in the relationship between the father and the mother, and so it's tempting for a father to want to triangle a child into that relationship. Grandma might critique mom's decision in front of the children, triangling them into her relationship with her daughter. Those are all examples of triangles.
"I can't believe my ex-husband. He is driving me crazy. The way he treats the kids, I just can't believe it. You know, the kids were over at his house last weekend. They stay up all night when they're over there. There's no bedtime. You know, they just sit and watch TV until they fall asleep. You don't think that's good, do you? You know, don't you think they should have a bedtime? You think they should have a bedtime, don't you? Of course they should have a bedtime. My goodness. Then I get them home on Sunday, I have to deprogram them. You know what I mean, don't you? I have to deprogram them, you know. They were used to staying up all night. And then, my goodness, the food they eat. They just want sugar when they come home, too. I said, we're not doing that here. It's like completely different. But, and then, my ex-husband, he buys this game for Tyler. One of those shoot-em-up video games. I can't believe it. I hate those games. You know, he knows I hate those games. They're really bad for kids, aren't they? Don't you think they're bad for kids? Terrible. Terrible. Makes them violent, angry, disrespectful, the whole thing. I think he bought that game just to spite me. Well, you know what? I've got an idea. Wait till you hear this idea. I'm going to have him over. My ex-husband, over to the house. I figure we should have a conversation about the kids, right? We could maybe, you know, be peaceful, relaxed. You know, maybe I'd even draw the bathtub for him so he can get in the tub and relax. Then I'm throwing the hair dryer in. You wait, I'll get him, I will. Don't you think that's a good idea?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
You see what she's trying to do? She's trying to triangle you into her difficult situation. Have you heard that before? People do it all the time. Triangling is a common problem. Well, we want to talk about how to deal with triangles because your children learn bad habits through bad triangles. Triangles aren't always bad. They can be very productive and helpful, but it depends on how we involve other people in the process. So in order to help you understand triangles, let's look at person number one, person number two, and person number three, and imagine being in each one of those situations and knowing how to deal with it. Person number one is one of the persons in conflict. And we'll say that number one is also the initiator, the one trying to pull in someone else. This may be you when you feel like you're like talking to your kids about your boss, or when you're frustrated with your ex or your mother. The point is, you're stressed and want to bring someone else into the picture. It isn't wrong, by the way, to do this, but the way you do it determines whether it's helpful and productive or it's counterproductive and a bad example to your children. The good way is to involve a third person as a coach or a counselor, often starting with the words, "You know, I need some help. I'm not exactly sure what to do in this situation." Honestly, not manipulatively, getting some advice. Recognizing your weakness and saying that he's not the only one at fault, but I too have a weakness and I just need some ideas about how to respond in this situation. It's a humble response. Of course, the negative way to do this is to tattle or complain or beg for alliance against the other person. When you do that, you may gain sympathy and support, but you hurt relationships to the extent that your children see it, and you hurt them as well. It's wrong to be manipulative. It's tempting, but it hurts others in the process, including your children.
Okay, so that's if you're person number one. Let's say you're person number two. You're involved in the conflict now, but you're not the one drawing a third person in. You're almost like the victim in a sense. You're involved in this conflict, but that other person is drawing the third one in. How are you going to handle that? What do you do if your ex-husband is complaining about you to the kids, triangling them into the situation? How are you going to respond as person number two? We think that one of the helpful things you can do in that situation is just to point out the process. Help people see what's going on. Help person number one to see what they're doing and that it's not helpful if they're open to that and you can do that. Certainly, though, if children are involved, you want to explain to them the situation. You want them to see the process and understand what's happening, help them to see what's going on, and that it's not the best way to handle conflict.
What we're trying to suggest here is that you can be each one of these people in the process. If you're person number three, let's say you're the triangled party, you need to learn to go into the situation as a counselor or as a coach. You're going to be asked to gang up and take sides against someone else, but don't do it. Help the person see their own part of the problem. When two children come to you and they're fighting, you don't want to gang up with one necessarily. You may agree that that other person is wrong, but even if he's wrong, doesn't mean that you can treat him the way you're treating. Let's talk about your part of the problem. You want to come in as a counselor or as a coach into the situation in order to help them deal with life in a more helpful way.
So we're going to share with you now just three things that you want to remember about triangles as we summarize some of these ideas. First of all, you want to point them out so that children can see them. You want to help them to understand them because then they're going to start seeing them also. They'll see them at school. They'll see them with their friends. They'll see how often people are not talking directly to one another, but they're kind of going around and they're talking to another person to try and get at the first person. So we want to, first of all, just recognize them, see them, and point them out to our children. Secondly, we want to use them in a positive way. We don't want to just be triangled in as the third person and take sides, but we want to use them in a way that's healthy. In any one of those positions, really, one, two, or three, there's a way to do it that in a healthy way and a way that's unhealthy. So we want to be looking at the patterns that we're in, the patterns our children are in, and looking for ways to adjust that to be more healthy. And thirdly, when you find yourself in a negative triangle, you want to stop dealing with the issue and start focusing on the process, so that everybody in the process can see what's happening. Do you see what we're doing here? You know, start asking those questions. Bring the process to the surface and deal with that first before we go back and try and solve the issue.
Take time to teach your children about triangles. Help them to be able to see when a triangle is developing. There are some common triangles probably that are habits in your network of people that you deal with. There may be some triangles that happen on a regular basis. You may have a hard time trying to know how to deal with that whole issue. As you're trying to process it, involve the children and teach them what a triangle is so that they can see it in their budding relationships. Triangles can be deadly if we don't deal with them, but they can also be opportunities for us to teach. If you find yourself doing something inappropriately in a triangle as any one of the partners in that triangle, then apologize. Use it as a way to be vulnerable to your children and say, you know, I made a mistake. I see what I did here. I got to do it something different. Change course. Teach your children about triangles. It will become a tremendous asset. We see that triangles are a common problem where there's a lot of conflict. And single parenting sometimes is a magnet for conflict in relationships. And so triangles sometimes are more prevalent. They also exist in blended families or reconstructed families where you've got differing relationships that are trying to be strengthened, some stronger than others. Raising the idea of triangles to the surface deals with the issue, but more importantly, it deals with the process, the way that we're relating in family life. It can have a significant effect on healthy relationships in family life.
This is the end of side one. Please turn the tape over and rewind it to hear the rest of this session.
So now we're talking about all these three different kinds of relationships that we've suggested. People who relate just to your children, people who relate primarily to you, and people who relate to all your family. And we're sharing three suggestions
for dealing with those kind of relationships. The first suggestion was to choose influences wisely in all three of those areas. Secondly, to understand triangles and to use them constructively. And thirdly, now the third principle is to teach children to handle binds. Binds are things when children get mixed messages. Dad does it one way, mom does it another way. The child's living here with mom. They have to, you know, clean up their room and take a shower before they go to bed. They go over to dad's house and he doesn't care about those things. And he lets them watch movies that mom won't let them watch. And those are binds. Children get mixed messages from different adults that they're with, the different influences on their lives. And we want to help children understand those binds and deal with them in a way so they're not so confused. They're not being pulled in different directions, but they begin to see what's going on.
We're primarily, at this point, trying to deal with the mixed messages that our children receive from different sources in order to address those. We see that this is a common issue in single-parent families, but it's a common issue that all children face as they find themselves in places with different authorities. So a child may learn one thing at school and another thing at home, one thing with his friends, another thing from his parents. He's getting mixed messages, their binds. How do we help children deal with them? Let me read a letter from Jim. Jim is 22 now, but he reflects on the years growing up with mixed messages. He says, I lived with my mom, but occasionally my dad would take me for a couple of days. It was always a little strange going over to dad's because it was as if all the rules were different. With mom, I had a bedtime, we didn't eat fast food, and I couldn't watch scary movies. With dad, he didn't seem to care about these things. I often felt guilty when I was with dad. I was having fun without the limits, but I felt bad. As I grew up, I tried to put it all together, but I just grew more confused. I mean, my mom would talk about honesty, but she spied on my dad. She would talk about controlling my anger, but I would listen to her yell at him. As I look back on it now, I see that I got a lot of mixed messages. It left me confused. Even now, I find myself second-guessing whether I'm doing the right thing. The world just doesn't seem to make sense sometimes. Everyone seems to have their own opinion, and I'm not sure what to believe. It's hard to make decisions because I might make the wrong one. I think I missed out on some important things as I was growing up, and I spend a lot of my life feeling confused now. I second-guess myself. I'm not sure what's right or who to listen to.
Jim grew up in a single-parent family where there were a lot of mixed messages, and he ended up being confused in that situation, but even as an adult, he's still confused about some things because it wasn't explained to him. And we can use mixed messages that our children receive. We can't always eliminate them, but we can use them to teach our children important principles about life. Let me read you a story from Paul, who's 19 years old, and he reflects on his childhood, which the situation was similar, but the response was different. He says this, "It's amazing how different my parents were. It's no wonder their marriage didn't work. They have completely different values and live opposite lifestyles. One thing I appreciate about my mom, though, is that she's honest. She knew that dad didn't make me clean my room or take a shower when we were over there, but she was calm about it and explained the reasons behind her rules. She talked about why she had her ideas and why she lived the way she did. That helped me a lot because I understood her. I sometimes lived dad's lifestyle, but at least I knew the difference. My mom helped me a lot by talking about why she did the things she did. That's even helped me today. I can see how other people live differently than I do, but I know what I want, and I know that I have to make some choices to get there. My mom helped me to see that there are values in life that are different, and different people have different values. I like my mom's values, and most of the choices I make reflect similar ideas. It's not so much the rules that were helpful as I was growing up, but the fact that my mom took the time to explain why her rules were helpful in the long run. She explained the values behind the rules. Being with dad often was a test for me about those rules and whose rules I wanted to follow. After a while, I learned that mom's rules made more sense, and I began choosing them more and more on a regular basis. I'm grateful for the way she handled the differences between them, explaining things to me. Being a single parent isn't easy, but my mom taught me a lot."
Now, you are going to find your children in situations where they are experiencing a bind. The best way to deal with a bind is for the two people in authority to get together and agree on how they're going to make a decision, how they're going to raise the children, what decisions they're going to make, how they're going to handle a particular problem. That would be ideal. Often that's a futile attempt to become united in those situations. And so we have to resort to another approach, which we think teaches children a tremendous amount. And that is that parents need to talk about convictions and values. Often when we're asked the question, what if one parent raises a child or wants to raise a child completely different than another? What's going to happen to that child? Well, the fact of the matter is the child's experiencing a bind. And it's important for you as a parent to explain the convictions and values that you have that rest behind the rules so that your children learn what goes on. But not only how you would make decisions, why you make the decisions. You don't want to just say, well, that's not how we do it around here. When we're around here, we do it this way. You might not allow a 10-year-old to watch a certain kind of movie, but they might watch that certain kind of movie over at dad's house. You want to explain to that child why it is that you don't watch or you don't allow your son to watch those kind of movies in your house. It's important at this point to not necessarily say that the other person is evil. That's not what we're suggesting. But we do want to point out, emphasize the convictions and values that we have. That, and we say, you know, you're going to see convictions and values that I have for my life that are different than other adults. Your dad may allow you to do those things. I don't agree with what he's doing. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's a bad person. The fact is, when they grow up with different parents or different influences in their lives, there is the ability to learn from each one some significant things. And our children can pick and choose. What we want them to do is we want them to respond to our rules and guidelines, not seeing them as legalistic rules that they have to follow. We want them to pick up the values that are behind them. One mom said, my son won't watch R-rated movies with his dad. He's developed his own conviction about them, and I'm proud of him. That would be our goal, wouldn't it be? To help our children to develop some inner conviction and values. We do that by training, modeling. There's little sometimes we can do when our children are in another environment like that. And so we have to let them go. But we're going to do everything we can when they're in our care to train them and prepare them for life so they'll know why. Not just that we're going to do it this way, but why we're doing it this way.
So you want to remember, when you see the mixed messages coming at your children, to take the time to explain them. And as we said, that doesn't mean that the other parent is necessarily bad, but they have different convictions, they have different values, they're doing things a different way. We want to talk about it, though, and not just assume that children figured out you were doing it a different way, because it's an authority that is giving them different messages. So we want to be able to say, yeah, this is the way we're going to do it, this is why, these are the convictions, the values, whatever, and your dad is doing it differently, or your mom does it differently. And bring it out into the open and talk about it. Be willing to talk about it, because that opens it up, too, for your children to ask questions of you and to talk about it when they are feeling confused.
Values help children develop their own convictions. It's the difference between being a Peter and a Daniel in the Bible. Peter was the kind of guy that when he got under pressure, he denied Christ three times. Didn't have the conviction to stand up in those moments of struggle. Daniel, on the other hand, was taken completely away from his parents, transplanted into a completely different place, and the king says, here's the food you're going to eat, and Daniel says, no, I'm not going to eat that food. Now, we're not just talking about food here, we're talking about all kinds of things, but the idea here is that Daniel had a conviction that he stood by. We can help our children develop convictions by teaching them our values. We want them to learn our values and understand our convictions so they can develop their own, whether it's about movies or food or neatness or speech or anything else. We're teaching our children convictions.
Relationships can be complicated, and they just happen. We find ourselves in different relationships. Our children are in different relationships. And we want to take those differences, see them as opportunities. We want to use life experiences as an opportunity to teach our children the skills they need to be successful in life. So we don't want you to feel discouraged because you're a single parent or because of things that are going on. We want you to view those as opportunities to help your children grow, to learn. And so we've shared with you 5 teamwork principles that you can put into practice to help your family unit be united and close, and also 3 relationship principles that can help you as you're interacting with other people to see what's going on and to be able to pick and choose the way you respond to those life situations so that your children can grow and benefit from them.
We believe that single parents can be successful now. Some single parents believe that they'll be successful someday when ever. We believe they can be successful now.
Well, that was a lot of material on relationships. We trust that these points will be helpful for you as you evaluate the friends and influences in the network of relationships. Now let's listen to Scott and Joanne as they talk about 10 things that make single-parent families successful.
One mom, after being a part of last week's session, was surprised. When she heard that we were going to be talking about relationships, she thought we were going to be talking about how to get into another one. And she was pleased to find out that we weren't talking about how to get into another one, but we were talking about how to make the best of the relationships that you're already in. How to look at the relationships you have now in order to make them successful.
Some single parents feel like their family isn't whole. Something's broken because they don't have a second parent for their children. And there's a lot of pain involved in that. And that's a reality in some homes, of course, and it's a painful situation where you need to be doing a lot of adjusting and grieving and adjusting some more. But in addition to that, single parents often sometimes feel like they're second-class citizens and that they can't experience the joy and just the enjoyment of life that other families have. And we don't believe that's true. We believe that as single parents, you can be successful, your families can be successful. And we're going to share with you tonight 10 ingredients of successful families, things that we believe can be true of your families as you're working with your kids, as you're developing them into healthy people. And so we're going to share with you some of those ideas. And we hope that's really encouraging to you, that you can do some things really well and be really successful as a family, even though you don't have a second parent necessarily living in your home.
We've done a tremendous amount of research on this particular session that we're doing. We've been actually researching for this session for a couple of years now. Let me just tell you about how we got to some of the conclusions that we have. One of the first things that we did that was exciting for us is that we studied the Bible. What does the Bible have to say about single-parent families? What does the Bible have to say about non-traditional families? And we found out some very exciting things, actually, very fascinating things, things that we appreciated quite a bit. And one of the things that we found is that God uses a model to describe His church. He uses the family. And God is a single parent of that family. And He has given principles to that family that make it successful. Now that's fascinating for us because we see in the scriptures that there are a lot of ways that we can be successful as parents, and that single parents can be successful with their children. And a lot of that starts just with the scriptures. Now God did create the family to have a father and a mother. But we see often examples in Scripture where that doesn't take place. In fact, God loves the family, and He sticks up for the widows and the orphans, people who don't have a mate or people who don't have all their parents there. God sticks up for them, we see in the Scriptures. Furthermore, we see that there are a number of non-traditional families in the Bible in which the children grew up to do some actually pretty profound things. Here's some examples that we found of non-traditional families in the Bible. Esther, Daniel, Joash, the widow of Nain, the widow of Zarephath, Timothy, Moses, Samuel, Hagar and Ishmael, Josiah. I mean, you can just kind of keep a running count here. It's actually amazing to see how God works in families of all kinds, and He uses people in all kinds of situations. Now, we want this session to be an encouraging one for you because we believe that sometimes single parents feel as if they're kind of relegated to some second class something. We don't believe that to be the case. We believe that you can have the ingredients that will make your family successful, and we want to spend some time just talking about how that can be true for you and your group, your family, your unit that you're working with.
We believe that children can grow up to be successful adults without having two parents living at home with them. We believe that your family can be successful. And one of those ingredients you need for success is not a maid or a lot of money in the bank. But we're going to talk about 10 ingredients, success principles that we believe you can put into practice in your family so that you can raise children who grow into successful, productive adults in our society. As we did this study on the family, we looked at research that's been done on the family. What makes a successful family? We looked at the psychology experiments and what they consider to be successful. We looked at books that have been written on a successful family. How do they describe success? And what does that look like? And how do they define it? And then, of course, we looked at the Bible. We looked for success principles there. And then we tried to put it all together.
Here's how we did it. We went to the Bible and we said, what does God say as a father about His family, the church? What instructions does He give to that family in order for that family to be successful? And we just listed all these different principles that God gives to the family to make it successful. His church. Then we went to the research, contemporary research on the family. And with that research, we listed all the kinds of ingredients that make up successful families. There's a number of studies that have been done on successful families, what ingredients are necessary to make those families successful. So we took that list, and we took the list over here that has to do with the information that comes from the Bible, and it's amazing how similar the lists were. And so from those lists, you see, the reason that is because God knew all along what makes a successful family, and psychological studies are just picking that up now. But the fascinating thing now is to take those ingredients, bring them together, and we've created a list of 10 things that make a family successful. And we want to spend some time sharing those things with you, and then we want you to be able to evaluate yourself. This can be kind of like a report card for you on your family. We hope that as you look at this list, you'll find some things that you're successful in already, you're doing well at. You'll find some other things that maybe you need to work on. Being a report card will help you to evaluate those things, and you'll go away from here, we hope, encouraged because you are doing some things well, encouraged because you know what the target looks like, and you'll be able to move forward with your family and making it successful.
Anyone who's a part of a healthy, growing church will see that the instructions that God gives to the church to make it strong and successful are the same instructions that we can take into our families to make our families successful. God gives instructions on how to care for one another, how to handle conflict, the importance of tolerance and commitment to one another. Studying the scriptures then gives us some ideas of what we can put into practice in our families, and we're not just following then the ideas of some psychologist or, you know, the latest ideas, but we're taking the instructions that really come from the designer of the family and putting them into practice. So as we look over those 10 ingredients or success principles, we suggest that you just take time to think about them and which ones are you doing really well at. Maybe it's encouraging. Hey, we do that pretty well. We have that in our family. And maybe you'll come up with some other ones that maybe seem a little bit weak to you or you hadn't thought of that. And those are the ones you want to be focusing your time and energy on. So I just want to read over the 10 of them just so you can get an idea of what we're talking about here. This is success principles, 10 ingredients to make a successful family. Number one, commitment to each other. Number two, communicate openly. Number three, be honest and real. Number four, share emotions. Number five, distribute power. Number six, address conflict. Number seven, forgive each other. Number eight, overlook weaknesses. Number nine, relax together. And number 10, share spiritually.
We're not going to elaborate on all 10 of those tonight. It'd just be too much. But we are going to look at three different categories, and in all we're going to look at 7 of those principles in more detail in order to give you highlights of them. We're going to start by talking about commitment to your family, the first one on the list. And then we're going to go from that to talking about communication. 3 of them fit under the idea of communication. And then we're going to look at 3 that fit under the whole idea of conflict management. In the midst of this, we hope to give you some very practical ways that you can address issues in your family to help your family to be successful together.
The first success ingredient is a strong family commitment. And we talked about this last week when we talked about teamwork in our family. We're going to spend some more time talking about that tonight because we believe it's so important. A strong family has a sense of teamwork. See, in unhealthy families, individuals just focus on themselves and there's divisiveness and competition. But in a healthy single-parent family, you're working together. You're a team. You're looking out for the interests, not just of your own, but for each person and becoming successful together, working on unity between you and not just individuality. The Bible gives us illustrations of families who lack this sense of teamwork, and the results were disastrous. Some families, like Abraham and his two sons, Isaac and Ishmael, they were torn apart because of disunity. Then Isaac didn't do much better when he got married. He married Rebekah, and their mom and dad took favorites. Isaac favored Esau, and Rebekah favored Jacob. And then they grew up, and Jacob, well, he followed all along the same thing that he was growing up with because he had 12 sons, and again, he took Joseph as his favorite. And that led to a lot of sibling conflict. So the disharmony in that family and the lack of unity was passed down from generation to generation.
Family commitment reveals itself differently in each family. In some families, it means all working together on a paper route together. It means all showing up at one of your children's sports events. Or maybe it means guarding the dinner hour to make that a significant social event. Whatever it means, you're going to try to focus on unity in one way or another to try to increase this family unity by emphasizing teamwork and commitment to each other. You're going to look for shared activities or experiences or common struggles that you can have together. See, there's a teamwork between mom and children, or dad and the children, that is fostered and creates the sense of unity in family life. Now, what that means is that sometimes your children may not be able to participate in all the activities they wish they could. You may have to limit the activities so that the family isn't torn apart. You see, often today, there are so many choices of the things our kids could be doing that they're torn in different directions and they lose that sense of family unity. Don't want to lose it. That sense of teamwork that you can develop between you and your children is very significant. It's helpful for them to learn some important things about life, and it's a way that you can help them to foster a sense of unity in their relationships with you. So this first one about a commitment to each other is a very important one that'll help your family to be successful. You want to look for ways, be creative, to try to find ways to unify and to emphasize the positive things in family life.
You may want to just spend some time thinking about what are the strengths of your family. Is there something that you're all good at or you all enjoy together? What is it that can draw you together as a family? Look for some strengths that you might have. One family was quite funny, and as they enjoyed humor together, it would kind of spill over to other people, and anybody who was around them would join in the laughter when they were with this family. But this family also had the downside of humor, where sometimes they were hurtful joking and they were making fun of each other in a negative sense. Once they recognized that, though, they were able to put some boundaries on that humor and just use humor for good to unify them and enjoy that laughter that they enjoyed together, and just, they were a funny family. They could enjoy that as a strength that they had. So you want to take time to just think about your family. What do you enjoy doing? Take time to work together, but also to play together, to do things where you're caring for one another and you're working together, contributing to a team environment as you spend time. Another family learned to work hard after coming through difficult times. When the family members were able to overcome their resentment of the fact they had to work so hard, they realized that, you know, that they could feel good about that. They could be proud of themselves because they knew how to work hard to get the job done, and they had learned a lot about perseverance together.
This is the end of tape 3. This session is continued on the next tape. Scott and Joanne will continue the next session by talking more about the 10 things that make single-parent families successful.